you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, folks, to Mind Body Peak Performance. I hope that you all are digging deep to wrap up the year on a good note before we go into the holidays. I don't know about you, but I've always had a fascination with martial arts. The dedication and discipline, the shredded physiques, plus it just seems like a good skill to have. And although I love collision sports like American football and rugby, I wouldn't consider myself a fighter. That's why I was thrilled to find something entirely different. A system that gives you the technical chops while at the same time only using physicality as a last resort. We call this becoming a peace walker. It's personal protection that isn't about fighting. In fact, it starts long before. I'm confident that by the end of the episode, you'll walk away with tips to harmonize all your relationships and to have the situational awareness of an elite military commander. Our guest this week is Craig Gray. Craig is a Krav Maga instructor, conflict communication expert, and former bodyguard who founded the Peace Walker program, an approach that teaches average Joes a simple method for protecting themselves and loved ones from harm. Craig is a speaker, trainer, and subject matter expert. For over two decades, he has been highly sought after by private and government organizations, Fortune 500 companies, and many others for his unique approach. Craig's worked with people ranging from Navy SEALs to soccer moms, police to private security, teachers to healthcare providers, and everyone in between. Craig's an advanced black belt instructor in several martial arts, including Budo Taijutsu and, of course, Krav Maga, the infamous Israel Defense Force Defensive Tactics System. He runs a Krav Maga Academy located in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and is an associate instructor and founding member at Resolution Group International, a conflict management company serving the needs of the U.S. military, law enforcement agencies, and private organizations. I'm picking Krav as my entry point into martial arts, but one thing that Craig mentions in our conversation as a quick rule of thumb is that the more simple a system is, such as Krav, unfortunately, the more violent it is also. So that's why it's extra important to get good training to know what you're doing. If you're interested in joining, Craig has a free 6-day defense program. It's a great start into the protector lifestyle and a first step to becoming a peace walker. I actually just signed up today. Hope to see you there. All right, let's dig into the episode. This morning, I've got Craig Gray on the show. Craig is a conflict management expert and the founder of the Peace Walker Project. Craig, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How's it going?
All good over here. It is 7:23 in the morning. So far today, what unusual or non-negotiables have you done for your health and performance?
Well, Nick, I'm a pretty simple guy, and getting out of bed is always a good start. I don't know how unusual that is, but getting out of bed, making my bed, remembering some of the things that I'm grateful for. I think my health, my loved ones, and thinking about who I'm serving. So I can be the best person and get the day off started right, so I can really clarify everything else that's going to happen. So this idea of kind of my lifeguard analogy, many of you probably have not heard it, but a lifeguard has to be a strong swimmer. So when the lifeguard works out and takes care of him or herself, they are doing it also to be able to be a lifeguard. So I think, the mindset is the biggest thing that I try to work on when I'm first out of bed that, again, I don't know how unusual it is, but you'd hope that a lot of folks are doing it out there. But aside from that, I try to slam my nutrition shake, and you know, usually I get up, the first thing I do is I work out, but I had to prepare for our meeting today, so the workout's gonna have to wait till afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Likewise. And on the mindset front, what do you do? Do you sit there and journal? Do you just think about it, take a pause? Is it a shower thought? How does that work?
Depends. I am a huge journaler. I have literally dozens of journals that I started doing back when I was a kid. And kind of the cool and embarrassing thing is I keep them all around. So I sometimes will go back and go, holy cow, what the heck was I thinking? You know, figure I'm 51 now. And I started journaling when I was probably the earliest one I have. And this is no lie, I feel like getting up and grabbing it is, I guess it could be considered a journal. Third grade, you know, our teacher had us do a project about, you know, asking all these personal questions and kind of what you're thinking, what you're doing. I still have that. So I guess technically I've been journaling since I've been in the third grade. So that's been a real insight to me for understanding that a lot of how much I've grown and how much I've stayed the same. So there you go.
Are there any standard questions that you ask yourself, or is it just free flowing? Whatever comes to mind.
It's pretty free flow. If I'm struggling that day, so because some days obviously we struggle, you know. And if I'm struggling that day, I try to just make a list of the things I'm grateful for. What are those things that I'm really appreciative of, and so forth. And but it depends. Some days it's more about like business and being an entrepreneur. Some days it's more about teaching and, you know, what I'm excited about or what I'm nervous about the business and so forth. Some days it's about my personal training, my personal growth. I don't know if your folks out there know it quite yet, but, you know, part of the Peace Walker Project and a big part of my life and my training is martial arts. I've been in Krav Maga and martial arts for 4 decades, and it's a big part of my life. It's a big part of the process of the training, and I still practice and I train, you know, pretty much every day. So I'm always having, you know, new discoveries and things that I'm working on. Sometimes it's an injury journal too, but
<Hope not.
laughs> how am I going to get through this as I go down this path?
Yeah. Well, Craig, let's go there. Let's talk about your background.
Well, my background started with my brother and I. So my brother and I, as you can imagine, he was an older brother, and he wasn't always the gentlest and kindest brother in the world. Not to throw him under the bus, but in all seriousness, he had some issues when he was younger, emotional issues, psychological issues, substance abuse issues, anger issues, and a lot of that he took that out of me. My folks didn't think I was going to make it past my, you know, 10th birthday or anything because of some of his shenanigans. And my father was a Marine, so he started me off. He's like, oh, yeah, I got to teach this kid how to protect himself because his brother is going to, you know, gonna end him. So my dad actually started teaching the both of us martial arts back when I was a kid. And this was back before, you know, Karate Kid, back before the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all that kind of stuff. This was back in the 70s. So back then, there weren't really kids classes. They're really more adult classes. So my dad started me off in the basement, and I really took to it. And eventually I was big for my age, so I trained with my dad for several years, and then he put me in a professional school where I could work in with the adults. So as I got bigger, I eventually was able to kind of stand up to my brother and show him the what for of why not to mess with me anymore. And I liked that feeling of being empowered. So later, as time went on and I got a little older, I had the opportunity to start teaching martial arts. Mm-hmm. And then that turned into getting into more security services, protective services, bodyguard work, executive protection, that type of thing. And I started working with a lot of law enforcement. So again, this is back in the 80s, 90s now. I know we're kind of still back there a ways. You have to think of, so from your old, for your old timers out there, you know, before the Rodney King incident and so forth out in LA. Mm-hmm. But I had some police officers that were students of mine, and they would sometimes go on patrol and have some things happen. They would come back to the academy and say, hey, Craig, you know, these are some things that happened. Can you help us figure them out? And I did. So what started to happen in those days is I started to get a reputation with the law enforcement community to that I was the guy for kind of the practical, tactical type stuff. So I started getting hired by police departments locally to do workshops initially it was because of the physical stuff. Because you have to keep in mind, back in those days, really after the police academy, most officers didn't have much of a the police departments really didn't have a systematized defensive tactics program after the police academy. So they would hire guys like me. They would hire guys who maybe had a little bit of experience and could show them some moves. Usually they had a martial arts background or some practical background. So I have been in like sport martial arts and traditional martial arts, and then Krav Maga a little bit later for many, many, many years. So I started getting called by these police departments to help them train. And then I started doing ride-alongs. And so that was cool, you know, kind of seeing how it actually happens. Yeah. And at that point in time, I was transitioning into doing some more security work myself. So I was getting some practical experience outside of the dojo, so to speak, and outside of the sport arena, because I started competing when I was fairly young as well. Mm. And what I noticed was this. I noticed that some police officers were really good at their job, and they really mitigated and navigated conflict very well, and others did not. Some cops you'd ride along with, and you know, they'd come into a tense situation and they'd really bring things down. And then I'd go with others and they would take a situation that wasn't tense at all and make it like a fisticuffs.
Oh man.
And it didn't always deal with the physicality of it. So what I started to notice is, wow, it's not only about the physical nature of being a protector that is necessary to being effective at it. And at that point in time, too, one of my instructors took me under his wing and started helping him administer safe rape against, it was a rape prevention course, right? And so I started helping him with that. So I started seeing another side of personal protection, you know, outside of the traditional martial arts and sport arena, outside of you got the police environment, which is a particular type of conflicts usually. And then other concerns of these ladies coming in who are not martial artists and they want to learn how to protect themselves and feel not vulnerable. So I started getting that experience as well. And then it kind of broke off into teaching. So teachers. So I had some students that were teachers and they're like, I'm having some problems with my class. You know, I can't control these kids. Further yet, I can't control the parents on student-teacher conferences. I'm getting kind of bullied by these parents. So over the years, little by little, between these different elements of my own experience as an instructor, my own experience in life, my own experience as a knucklehead as a kid, and my own experience as time went on in the security services, I wasn't a cop. I wasn't a police officer. So I didn't have the authority. So when I was, let's say, doing a detail, being a bodyguard, you know, I didn't have the authority to tell people what to do. I didn't have that power of representation. I had to get really good at talking to people. I had to get really good at negotiating with people and de-escalating people because I didn't have that idea or look of, wow, this guy's representing, you know, a higher authority. I better listen to him. I didn't have that. I had me trying to, you know, finagle my way into getting folks to do what I needed them to do to keep them safe. So all those different experiences, I started to develop this Peace Walker approach. And the Peace Walker approach really, it stemmed from an old program that I had back in the early 90s called the Psychology of Self-Defense. And it was a multifaceted approach structured for the non-martial artists, because most of the people that I work with aren't martial artists, although I do run a martial arts academy, a Krav Maga academy locally, and that's fun, and we love doing it, and we get a lot of professional protectors and just people who are protectors at heart to train there, mainly the physical stuff in that capacity. But to really embrace this idea of being a protector, whether it's in your personal life or professional life or public life, it's more than just learning how to punch and kick and choke people out, and that's the fun stuff, so to speak, but but it's really a bigger deal than that.
So when I think of martial arts, I think of two people going on the offensive, attacking, and sounds like Peace Walker is actually the opposite. It's being on the defensive, learning to de-escalate the situation in the first place so that it never comes to that. What are some of the components that go into living as a peace walker or a protector?
That's an awesome question, Nick. I want to start off on this. The physical confidence that you get from training in the martial arts, even if you never have to use it, will change your game totally. I see it all the time. I've seen it for decades. So I call it the alpha and the omega, right? The alpha is if you learn at a very visceral level, very personal level, very intimate level of how to physically protect yourself and feel confident in those abilities, that's kind of that helps to give you an anchor. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the first thing obviously is your, you know, being able to breathe and eat and sleep and all that kind of stuff. But the rung up from those, that physical nature of staying alive is your safety needs. So feeling as if you have some confidence in that type of conflict changes the whole game for people. So that's the kind of the alpha, the beginning. And then the omega is you start to realize if you train in the proper way with the proper mentorship, with the proper skills, you understand and you learn that it's the last resort. So you're willing to go there if you have to, but you know it's a last resort. So the components that, for instance, in the Peace Walker approach is made up of four main components. And the first one is mindset. And each of these components, I don't want to drag it on too much, but each of these components have components. But it's mindset, awareness, influence, and action. Mm-hmm. And the influence part of it is obviously the verbal communications portion of it, your presence, you influence through presence, you influence through nonverbal cues. So how do you become a really good communicator? Because people don't realize that we teach people how to treat us and how to be in our presence. Huh. Over time, not overnight. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to get some outliers, right? We've all been disrespected before. We've all been, you know, hopefully, some of you out there, I know, myself included, have been like physically attacked or assaulted. Not always your fault. Not saying that. What I'm saying is if you see norms like, man, people always try taking advantage of me, you know, or you know, you think, wow, everybody's such a jerk. Well, at some point, you got to kind of look in the mirror and see, well, how am I contributing to this? You know, how am I constructing my life in a manner to where either I'm attracting people like this or I'm giving this off to have people respond in such a way? So that is very important. So those are the four pillars that we work on. Mindset being the beginning, and the fundamental portion of mindset is this, the belief that life is precious. It's all based on the ethic of the dignity and sanctity and respect for life. Hmm. And it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because the counterintuitive part is this. That is easy to think of like, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, everybody's life is worth something. You know, we should work to treat them with dignity and respect. And then the conflict happens, right? Or, you know, some of the folks that I deal with, martial arts, military law enforcement, you know, they're dealing with some bad mamba jambas. You know, you're dealing with rapists, murderers, terrorists, combatants that would take your life as well. So how does that work with that? Isn't that a duality? Isn't that contradictive? And the answer is no, it is not. You have to be able to separate the life value from someone's actions and behaviors. So can you, if you can find the wherewithal to respect the individual while appropriately dealing with their actions at any level that's necessary. You're going to be able to mitigate that conflict more effectively. You're going to be able to handle it and make better tactical decisions if you can do that. If you dehumanize or demonize the other individual or group of individuals, you're going to start making some poor choices in the moment, over time, societally, and so forth. And I really, that stems back to my story of, with my brother, really. Because when I stood up to him when I was a kid, I still loved him. But I knew I didn't want to be victimized anymore. When I say victimized, my brother used to put me in the hospital, burn me cigarettes, you know, just not so. He was an overachiever when it came to bullying. And I don't want to overemphasize that or overdramatize it because, you know, we were also brothers and we did brotherly type stuff. But the point is he was a bit of an overachiever on that. And I knew for some reason on a very intimate level, I knew that he was suffering. Now it's the 50-year-old Craig kind of seeing it and describing it. You would imagine the child Craig trying to figure it out is much different. But I knew I loved him, but I also knew I didn't like getting kicked around and victimized and, you know, belittled all the time. And I also didn't, I knew that I didn't like how I felt about myself when it happened. And that maybe was even bigger than the other. I didn't like living like a victim. And there came a moment in time with my brother at that time of my life where I had to make a decision. Was I going to live the life of a victim and see myself as a victim? Or was I going to live my life from an empowered standpoint? Now what I would call a peace walker. And it's kind of that, you know, Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey. It was kind of like that, right? Here I am kind of Luke Skywalker facing my Darth Vader, so to speak. And I had a decision and I chose to live as a protector no matter what would have happened at that time. So that was my first choice I had coming to this world. And the second choice that I had really was dealing with the other individual, which brings us full circle to what I was talking about with the life value. Was I going to see my brother as a human being? Was I going to see through his negative behavior and still love him as my brother while I appropriately managed that behavior? Or was I just going to demonize him, dehumanize him, and treat him like a piece of crap? And I chose to see him as a human and separate his behavior from that value as a life force.
When you say conflict, you can think about your traditional street encounter, but there's also the workplace conflict that you go out at night and there could be a conflict there, or even something as simple as in a discussion with your partner, there can be a conflict. Do you have tips on resolving conflicts more effectively?
The first, as I said just a second ago, the first idea is that of treating people with dignity and respect and separating their behavior out. So that's first, right? So that's where it all comes from. And then you've got to remain baseline. So baseline is, you know, keeping your cool under pressure. We are very reactive when we feel as if we're being threatened or attacked, verbally, emotionally, socially. We see, you know, in the past year and a half with the COVID situation, the pandemic, and in the United States here with a lot of the race riots and so forth that are happening with Black Lives Matter movement and so forth, it's really put us at odds. And if we're not able to keep our cool and separate someone from their behavior, saying, "Well, you're still a person, you're still a human, your life still has value, even if you're a Republican, even if you're a Democrat, even if you're this or that," right? It sounds ridiculous when we're talking about it when we're drinking a beer or having a coffee, but when in the thick of it, I mean, look at some of the toxic memes that you see, or the toxic Facebook posts or tweets that you see. And unfortunately, some of this stuff is coming from our leaders too, and then other people follow suit. So first and foremost, try to keep it in your head that, hey, this person's a human being like me. Show some empathy. They're feeling feelings just like I am. You don't have to agree with what they say. You don't have to agree with how they live. And sometimes you even have to intervene to protect yourself or someone else. But don't lose sight of their humanity. So that's first. Second is to keep your head. You know, keep a cool head. A lot of that deals with, back to our former conversation of learning some self-defense, to help you to stay present and not feel so threatened. And then from there, obviously, you know, can you work things out? Can you find that both and rather than an either or circumstance? You can't always necessarily, but empathy, I think, is huge in that whole process and listening. You know, listen to the other person, show empathy, try to work out and see how you can make a both and kind of situation. And it doesn't always necessarily mean a win-win. A lot of people think, oh, let's start out with a win-win. In my field of work, there isn't always a win-win. Some people don't want to go to jail. You know, some people don't want to be in the situations they're in. So I like to say it's, can you find most good, least harm? Can you search for most good, least harm under the circumstances? As we know, when it comes to conflict, sometimes people need to be detained or maybe if you're a teacher, they need to be given a detention or kicked out of school. Maybe if you're a manager, they need to be fired or given some type of disciplinary action. If you're a police officer, maybe somebody needs to be detained or arrested, taken to jail. If you're in military or in a self-defense situation, sometimes you have to hurt somebody or even take a life. Well, you don't do it because the person is less than you. You do it because their actions dictated that, and it was a last resort of escalation of force to the degree that everyone is as safe as you can make them. So
a big part of it is really just keeping in mind at all times the separation of them as a human and their actions.
That is a good summary after my 5-minute discussion.
So what else goes into living as a peace walker? Because you've mentioned that, yes, part of it's physical. A lot of it also isn't physical. And for the ladies listening in thinking that, okay, I want this safety and security, but I also don't know about training around the clock for like self-defense. How do you help them?
That is the kind of crux of what we're talking about, I think, because most people aren't going to be martial artists. Most people aren't Navy SEALs. But the cool thing is we were born protectors. We're born protectors. All you listening out there, you are already a protector. You just have to make sure you're protecting the right things. So most of the situations that we run into happen out of opportunity. So you don't want to be an easy target. You want to be a tough target. Now that kind of takes two things in consideration. I call it gung-ho or gun-shy. You don't want to be the gun-shy person. Basically, you don't want to be the doormat, right? You don't want to look the part of being a victim. So if you're out and about, you don't want to look as if you're distracted or look as if you're going to be an easy target, then be victimized by a mugger and this type of thing. In the same token, you don't want to be overly gung-ho either. The gung-ho people, they kind of, yeah, they look intimidating, but they cause problems because they stir up conflicts, right?
Yeah.
We are already protectors inside of us, but we want to strike a balance. So draw clear boundaries with people. So when it comes to verbal conflicts, relationship conflicts, emotional conflicts with other individuals at work, at home, in your personal life, drawing clear boundaries. So first off, you have to know what your boundaries are. What are your deal breakers? And they have to be reasonable and fair for everybody. Like I can't say, Nick, I demand that you respect me. A, I can't make anybody respect me, right? I can teach people how to treat me in my presence, or I can learn to leave or deal with it in a different way. But I can't really, I can demand respect, but you have to choose to give respect. But if I don't draw boundaries on what that is, there's going to be issues, right? So a lot of people who are gun shy, they're passive. They don't really draw boundaries clear enough or soon enough.
Hmm.
And that's huge, especially when it comes to a woman's self-defense and woman's empowerment. Many individuals will not communicate boundaries soon enough or clear enough. Some of them haven't even considered what their own boundaries are. Now, boundaries can be verbal, emotional, physical, but don't be bashful about clarifying. Kind of here's how I work. Here's the rules of the game. And what happens is a lot of people will respect those boundaries, and those who don't, you can start to see, oh, this person isn't respecting my boundaries. So what's my plan B? So understand that your life is valuable too. You are deserving of respect. You are kind of the master and mistress of your own destiny to a large degree, to take self-advocacy and teach people how to treat you and others in your presence. And you don't need a martial arts course. You don't need to buy a gun. You don't need to get pepper spray. All those things are good, and I'd recommend that you do if it suits you. But learn how to use those things wisely. And always remember that you're the weapon, right? you are already that.
And especially based on what you just said, your awareness in particular, no matter the situation.
Yeah, the second category of the fundamentals of the being a peace walker, one is mindset, which is made up of that ethic. It's made up of the identity as a protector, and it's made up of the attitude of seeing conflict as an opportunity. Obviously to grow, but also so you can figure out what needs to be done in the circumstance. Because if you're not part of the problem, the individual or situation will tell you exactly how it needs to be managed. But you've got to be able to see it, which brings us to awareness. And awareness of three basic things. Basically awareness over yourself, awareness over others, and awareness of the situation. Now the situation includes the environment, right? So at a very, I think, basic level, it's, you know where your exits and entrances are and, you know, anything that might get in your way of your moving if you're talking about a pure self-defense situation. But also the environment includes, are you online, online environment, you know, what about a work environment versus a personal environment? What about an environment, a relationship environment? You know, your relationship from a father to a son is different than a father to a wife. You know, husband, wife, or a brother, sister, or, you know, we have a lot of different types of relationship environments and understanding the parameters of each of those. So awareness is huge. It's the idea of, well, can I avoid this? Is this my fight? Pick your battles. Not every fight's your fight. Not every fight in life is your fight. Just like, let's say, a cause, you know, people nowadays, I think it is a really good thing that many younger people are inspired to do something that's meaningful, to take up a cause. And that's awesome. Unfortunately, we can't take up every single cause, right, and do any good at it. You have to pick a few that are really meaningful to you so you can make a lot of headway. Otherwise, you're just going to spread out your time, attention, and resources too thin, and you really don't accomplish that much.
Yeah.
So awareness is huge of understanding yourself so you can help to understand other people in the environment that you're in.
When you go into a new situation, aside from spotting the entrances and exits and any potential people to keep your eye on, do you do anything else to have a good gauge of the situation, any potential situations?
I travel a lot. I have for decades, both for professional reasons and for personal reasons, because I enjoy traveling. But regardless of what reason it's for, here's the thing. I don't always know the culture that well. I don't always speak the language. And back in the olden days before Google, you know, you always didn't have a computer to research where you're going thoroughly. Nowadays you do. So A is know the culture that you're going in. And I don't care if the culture is across town or the culture is across the country or the culture is across overseas. Know kind of the area. Know the culture of crime, know the culture of how people interact and so forth. Be curious and look for the things that appear to be odd. Look for the things that stand out. Now, when I say stand out, not necessarily stand out to you, but stand out in relation to what you are observing, right? For instance, I remember the first several times that I was over in the Middle East. The men would talk like nose to nose to one another, and they would often yell in Arabic or whatever country I was in, you know, Hebrew, Arabic, or whatever. And I was always thinking that this is bad. There's going to be a fight breaking out, and, you know, next thing you know, people are going to get blown up and shot and all this. It took me a little bit of time and some mentoring by some more seasoned travelers to say, no, that's them just negotiating and talking. They're passionate people, and the men will get really close. Now, man to woman was from much, much further away, right? Unless they were even, I guess, even in the public setting with the husband and wife, they typically keep their distance. They're not like in the West where, you know, you're holding hands and hugging and showing a lot of physical affection. It's a lot more subdued. But the men would negotiate nose to nose and yelling and screaming and arms going all over. And I'm waiting for, holy cow, what's going on? Do I have to jump in this or call the Middle Eastern equivalent of 911. So after realizing that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's their norm. So what looks out of place, right? So you have to be curious, I think. And the same thing I teach any security individual is you have to be curious. That's interesting. What's going on there? Why does that look different than all these other things in context to the environment?
Ah, okay. That's good to know. You mentioned that you specialize in one of the, I don't know if you call it forms of martial art called Krav Maga, but what's out there and how did you choose Krav specifically?
Yeah, I've been raised from since an early age in the martial arts community, and I have several, I don't like to say it, people, I've got several black belts in different systems. And then I hear a lady talks to me. He's like, hey, my 8-year-old's got a black belt. Great, which is good. But point is I've been licensed to teach in many different systems, both in sport, in traditional martial arts, and in combatives, defensive tactics. Krav Maga really isn't a martial art. It's really a defensive tactical system. And it was developed for primarily the military originally. And it was meant to be something that was easily taught and easily used when, you ran out of bullets or your gun jammed for the most part, or you didn't have a weapon to use. So Emmy Lichtenfeld, who's credited of creating Krav Maga, and I don't know if that's – Emmy was the first – Krav Maga instructor in the Israeli Defense Force. But keep in mind also, the Israeli Defense Force is an army, so there's other people that contributed to that over the years. And Emmy quickly learned that, A, not everybody's a martial artist. What took him years to develop, how could you teach a family who really weren't martial artists and weren't police officers, how could he teach them to stay alive in a very short period of time by defending themselves physically? So that's the first thing he learned. And the second thing he realized is sport and traditional martial arts didn't always work against angry mobs and the type of assaults that they were running into. So he started to develop, and this was before even the Israeli faction of it, but he started to teach people how to defend themselves and do it in a way that was more easily learned and worked under more extreme circumstances that weren't sport and was not very arty, so to speak. So kind of down and dirty. Here's some simple things that you can do to keep yourself alive. It was actually originally a 22-hour course for military personnel to go through to learn how to basic defensive tactics empty-handed. And not very different than our current military, let's say McMap, which is, like I said, Jack Hoban's a Marine, and he was one of the developers of McMap. McMap, I believe, at the fundamental level in boot camp, you get a 24-hour course of defensive tactics as a boot camp, because they have a lot of other things to train and work on. Mm-hmm. Same thing, the IDF now, I think it's somewhere between, I think it's more than 22 hours now, but I don't think it's any more than 40 hours of hand-to-hand combatives training and the basic training. I was introduced to Krav in the probably early mid-90s. I was out at a VIP executive protection school getting some certifications, and I was training with some Marines that had just gotten off from deployment. I think they just got out of their service. Anyways, they were working with the IDF, and they're, you know, we spent some time together, and like, hey, you're into martial arts. Have you ever seen this Krav Maga stuff? And I'm like, oh, I've heard about it. I saw it in Black Belt magazine or something, that, you know, kind of Jewish jiu-jitsu or whatever it is. And so they showed me some stuff. And keep in mind, at this point in time, I had already been training in martial arts and competing and all that for probably 25 years. And I liked what I saw, especially when I was doing more security type work and training more police officers, because like I said earlier, they're not really, most of them aren't martial artists. So it was a very simple approach, very easily obtainable. It really helped people to ramp up to be able to protect themselves and other people very quickly. So I decided, oh, that's kind of cool. So I started to I was traveling at that point in time, or shortly thereafter, I was traveling to both East Coast and West Coast to do seminars. And I hooked up with some Krav seminars and Krav certification courses with IKMF and Krav Worldwide and so forth in the early days. And then I trained in California with the Gracies for a little bit, and also Danny and Asanto. So I'd go out there a few times a year. And they all kind of lived in the same general area. And the same thing with Krav Worldwide. So I'd kind of do my rounds. I'd train at the Gracies, and then I'd train with Danny Asano for a little bit at his academy, and then I would train at Krav Worldwide.
It seems like Krav is, yes, it's a tactical system, and it's easier to learn than a lot of the others. But because it's so violent, doesn't that go against the ethos of being a peace walker?
Ah, that is a good point, Nick. I'm glad you're on it, man. I like it. Must be a morning person. But it is absolutely right. As a matter of fact, when I teach a lot of police officers and so forth, especially use of force stuff, Krav is on the ladder, on the end spectrum, because it tends to be violent. Here's the thing. More simple usually means more violent, unfortunately. You have to develop skill to be less violent. Same thing with your ethical approach, right? In order to be more ethical, you really have to be more skilled, because you have to navigate differently than just, hey, someone grabs a hold of my wrist and I kick them in the groin and poke them in the eye and, you know, push them away from me. That's very effective, and it's very easy to teach. It's not always appropriate. Mm-hmm. So I really lean on a lot of my other training. I have a lot of traditional Japanese jiu-jitsu and taijutsu training, so Budo taijutsu. So I travel frequently to Japan to train, and Jack Omens is my instructor in those arts. There's nine traditional Japanese martial arts, and my experience in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and so forth. So I have least teaching certificates in those as well. So I share a lot of that approach also from a physical standpoint with people. So they have to have a force continuum, a spectrum of physical skills to deal with conflict, and also a spectrum of verbal skills and emotional skills and ethical skills to deal with conflict. Because as you know, we were talking about earlier, conflict comes in all flavors. Yeah. Right. It's not just physical. It's not just mugging. It's also, hey, when that kid acts up in class, or you got to break these two knuckleheads apart. Right. How do you break them up from fighting, but try to hurt them the least amount, or a verbal situation with, you know, someone at work, or your significant other, or a friend, or out in public. You know, somebody parked in front of my car the other day. They're walking away and I'm like, hey, I got to get out. Right. And we ended up in a little bit of a verbal conundrum there for a second or two, while they were in a hurry and they thought I could get around them, and I didn't think I could. So basically I persuaded them to move their car. They didn't want to, and they were kind of irritated with me. But here's the thing. Most situations that we run into that are conflicts, they ramp up, they escalate. Yeah. And if you can kind of nip them in the bud at the lower portion of that conflict, you're going to be much, much better off. So you're absolutely right when you say that Krav Maga is kind of the omega, right? It's the ending portion. It's like, hey, if I have to go there, I can. So that's why, like in my classes and in the Peace Walker approach, we start people out by understanding how to stand, where to stand, how to move, how to de-escalate both emotionally, just by your presence, verbally, non-verbally, and if you have to have a spectrum of tools for yourself when it comes to physical conflict.
Craig, we've been going for a while, and if people are interested in learning more about the Peace Walker approach, connecting with you directly, or learning more about your work, how can they get a hold of you?
Great first start is go to my 6daydefense.com. It's all spelled out except for the dot, 6daydefense.com. What that is it's a free home study course, 6 days training. Now, don't get all intimidated. It's 10 minutes a day. So it's 2 5-minute videos. One video will give you a concept and a tip, trick, and tactic about mindset. The other video is a physical defensive tactic. It is a good first start to get introduced to me and this idea of what it takes to become a peace walker.
Perfect. And the links to your socials and your website will all be in the show notes as well.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a really good spot. So if you get on 6daydefense.com and go through that, if you love it, you can get a hold of me by one of those other means. And if you're like, that's pretty cool, but I think I'm good, then you don't have to.
I have one more question for you before we go on to the rapid fire round.
Ah, the rapid fire round. I'm looking forward to that.
Before the rapid fire round, though, first, if all knowledge on earth is gone, you get to save the works of the 3 most impactful teachers to your life or career. Who would you choose? What works and why?
Here are the 3 books that I would get. Number first one that was very influential to me was The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell. It was actually a video series, but it was also transcribed into a book. That was a Bill Moyers program that interviewed Joseph Campbell, and it was a multi-episode series. And hey, if they're burning books and the world is burning around me, we're going to have to kind of get back to the roots of this idea of where we came from and how we interact and all this. And The Power of Myth, I think, for me, it was incredibly influential for me. It changed my life. So unfortunately, I never got the chance to really meet Joseph Campbell in person, but he used to come into this town. We have a place called Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids here, and he used to, like every All Hallows Eve, you know, the night before Halloween, he would come and give a talk at Fountain Street Church. He had passed away before I had heard about him. But that's the first one. So The Power of Myth. The second one is The Ethical Warrior. The Ethical Warrior by Jack Hoban. My friend and mentor and teacher. That one will teach you all about this idea of being a warrior and what we were talking about the separation of the life value from managing behaviors and beliefs. And it tells his journey and Humphrey's journey into that. So The Ethical Warrior, because, hey, if things are burning down, we're going to have to rebuild them. And we need to rebuild them with this idea of good ethics and how to protect ourselves and protect those people around us. And then the final one, The Indispensable Calvin and Hobbes by Bill Watterson.
You've got all your bases covered there.
Right? I got to take the gamut.
I love it. Okay, let's go into the rapid fire round now. What's the best or worst advice you've ever received?
Oh, man. The worst advice I've ever received. There's so many. But ever heard, in my line of work, I'm kind of keeping it in my line of work, is, hey, if you want to defend yourself, go buy a gun, right? Your gun's not going to take care of your problem, right? It's a tool, and it can be a great tool, and I'm not anti-gun. I own a gun. I carry a gun. Guns are fine, but be respectful, be trained, and understand that the gun, like anything else, it's a tool. It's not going to be the be-all, end-all. Matter of fact, it can cause a lot of problems too. So there goes with a lot of responsibility owning a firearm. Yeah. So use it wisely and don't take the advice like many do of, hey, if you want to go learn to protect yourself, just buy a gun.
That's a common one too. I've heard that plenty of times.
Oh, I tell you, man, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that. I live in Michigan, so it's like, you know, I think you're almost born with a gun in your hand over this neck of the woods. But it's a fallacy. The gun's not going to solve your problems. Matter of fact, it can make your problems worse. Responsible usage of a weapon and a tool, that's a different story, but just arbitrarily trying to make yourself feel more confident and better by purchasing something that's so powerful isn't necessarily the best thing to do.
What's one thing that your tribe doesn't know about you?
I've got two facets of my personality. I'm pretty transparent, and in some ways I'm very, very private. So I'll say this one thing, because some people out there only know me like in the training capacity, so they don't realize I've had a pretty multifaceted life, and I was in the corporate world for many years. A local newspaper at one point in time back in the day when I was younger, I was picked and put on the cover of the paper as their, they had a design and fashion section. There's a lot of people out there like, what? You got to be kidding me. I always see you like in training clothes, right? But at the time, I was a sales rep for a printing company. I wore pinstripe suits and wore fedoras before they came back in style.
Wow.
And my quote is like, I'm trying to bring hats back. And apparently I did. So there was an expose of me on the Blue Bridge. If you're from the Grand Rapids area, you know where the Blue Bridge is. So they did a photo shoot and I was their poster child for fashion on that issue. So there you go.
Wow. A different side of Craig. Well, how would you like to conclude our episode together this morning?
I want to share this with everyone. Jack Hoban had shared this with me. Dr. Robert Humphrey, his mentor, had shared it with him, and I wanted to share the sentiment with you. Humphrey had what he called the Warrior's Creed, also called the Protector's Creed. Wherever you go, everyone is a little bit safer because you're there. Wherever you are, anyone in need has a friend, and whenever you return home, everyone's glad you're there. Humphrey thought that was a better life of living that way as a protector, and that's been my experience as well, and I wish that for each of you out there. Never forget that you are already a protector. Just make sure that you're protecting the right things, and if I can help you with that in any way, please contact me and let me know.
That's a great note to wrap things up with. Craig, thanks so much for your time today. It's been fun getting to know that there's actually more out there than just self-defense and how the right planning and action ahead of time can prevent needing to use these skills that you've mastered over so many years.
Thanks for having me on, Nick. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to maybe sometime you can come to Michigan and do some training at my academy. You can be my guest, right? One of our seminars or something.
Yeah,
so if you're ever in the area, look me up, man, or let me know. In the meantime, all the folks out there too, I really appreciate you listening in, and keep going.
Sounds good. Well, I'm Nick Urban here with Craig Gray, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.